Hi, this is Paul. This is another one of these best of videos. I tried one yesterday. This video is actually the first video that I think Jordan Peterson saw. And the reason I know that he watched it is because it was the first of my videos that he ever tweeted out. And I was a little bit surprised that he tweeted it out. And it was sort of an inspiration because I watched my kids watch The Office. And then I watched him in this biblical series talk about, you know attention and then what we pay attention to and why we pay attention. So I made this video about why we watch Jim and Pam and The Office. So this is, when was the date on this? This was December 18, 2017. So this was one of the very early videos. And Hope it's interesting for you. I had a lot of fun making it.
Hi, my name is Paul Vanderclay, and I'm the pastor of Living Stones Christian Reformed Church in Sacramento, California, and I've been making some videos about Jordan Peterson over the last week and a half or so. And I've, sometimes people ask me why I do this. Well, I figured out Jordan Peterson is getting a lot of traction via the spoken word on YouTube. I'm trying to figure out the ways in which YouTube is impacting our culture. I've been rereading Neil Postman's Amusing Ourselves to Death, trying to figure out this medium and how it shapes. So why am I doing this? Well, I could sit in my office and talk to myself. That would be boring and somewhat, that just sounds crazy. I could sit and record my thoughts in a microphone, but that seemed pointless, so I thought I'd play around with YouTube. And I've gotten a lot of response over the last week than I ever would have imagined. And it's been a little disorienting, but exciting. So I sincerely appreciate the feedback that many of you have given me. I'm sorry I can't respond to all the comments. There have just been way too many comments that I can process in. I have a day job, I'm a pastor, I have a church, I have a family, I have responsibilities. So I'm trying to do these videos to sort myself out and sort out Jordan Peterson and figure out where he fits into the big picture. And so as I was thinking about this yesterday, I thought about how in some ways Jordan Peterson, we watch Jordan Peterson for the same reasons we watch Jim and Pam in The Office. Now The Office was a hit series on TV. And it's on Netflix, and I know my kids have watched a lot of The Office. And so it's similar to Jordan Peterson talking about, I remember in the Maps of Meaning course, he talked about his young son watching the video of Pinocchio, and he would watch the video of the whale, over and over and over again. And Peterson made the observation, boy, that little kid, he's figuring something out in his head. And so I watch my kids as teenagers and young adults watch The Office. And my wife and I sometimes say, oh, I've got to watch The Office again, because we watch it over and over and over again. And I'm trying to figure out, well, why that happens. And this comment that Peterson makes on biblical series, Well, let me first say that, it's interesting that I'm starting to quote Jordan Peterson on video and minute, kind of like Bible and verse. Now, I know some of the Christians out there, that scares you. Just hold on to yourself. It's okay. But when I watch his videos, I try to catalog it, because he says some things and it's like, okay, I'm going to want to come back to this and I'm going to want to think about this again. But the observations he made in Biblical Series 9, minute 38.
And one of the things that Jung understood and the psychoanalysts understand, it's one of the most terrifying elements of psychoanalytic thinking, is very tightly allied with religious thinking, which is that you are not the master of your own house. There are spirits that dwell in you, within you, meaning you have a will and you can exercise a certain amount of conscious control over your being, but there are all sorts of things that occur within you that seem to be beyond your capacity to control. Your dreams, for example, that's a really good example, or your impulses, for example, you might think of those as so foreign from you that they're not even, you don't even want them to be part of you. But more subtly even, how about what you're interested in, what compels you? Like, where does that come from? Exactly. Because you can't conjure it up of your own accord, So if you're a student and you're taking a difficult course, you might say to yourself, well, I need to sit down and study for 3 hours. But then you sit down and that isn't what happens. Your attention goes everywhere. And you might say, well, whose attention is it then if it goes everywhere? Because you say it's your attention. It's like, well, if it's your attention, maybe you would be able to control it, but you can't. And so then you might think, well, Jen, just exactly what the hell is controlling it? And you might say, well, it's random. Well, it better not be random. I can tell you that. That happens to some degree in schizophrenia. There's an element of randomness in that. It's not random. It's driven by the action of phenomena that I think are best considered as something like subpersonalities, although even that's only a partial description. You can't make yourself interested in something. Interest manifests itself and grips you. That's a whole different thing. And so what is it that's gripping you?
In terms of mode, I'm right with this. And listening to Peterson has been super helpful in terms of understanding, you know, as a pastor, you pick up some psychology along the way and you had some in school. But Peterson's just been very helpful for me to shed some light on the subconscious. And in my past videos, I've talked about Jung, and I'm reading his autobiography now, which is a fascinating book. Some of the chapters are kind of creepy. The last chapter I read about his college days before he got into his psychiatric work, the chapter was tremendous, insightful. So I think Peterson is dead on right here that we don't, and I see this all the time in people I work with at, you know, in church or in the neighborhood or family members, we don't control ourselves. So what are we and how are we?
How do you conceptualize that? Is that a divine power? Well, it's divine as far as you're concerned because it grips you and you can't do anything about it. And so there's a calling in you towards what you're compelled by and what you're interested in. And sometimes that might be very dark and sometimes not. But you're compelled forward by your interest. And so the idea that what moves you away from your country and your father's house and the comforts of your childhood home is something that's beyond you and that you listen to and hearken to. That's exactly right. And you can say, well, I don't want to call that God. It's like, it doesn't matter what you call it exactly. It doesn't matter to what it is, what it's called. It still is. And if you don't listen to it, that's the other thing. If you don't listen to it, and I've been a clinician and talked to enough people now, as old as I am, to know this absolutely. If you do not listen to that thing that beckons you forward, you will pay for it like you cannot possibly imagine. You'll have everything that's terrible about life in your life and nothing about it that's good. And worse, you'll know that it was your fault and that you squandered what you could have had.
Now, there's so much in there that I can't get to, but does it matter? And this is exactly, and I'm going to get into this in this video, this is exactly why Peterson is grabbing people and why people who write me notes say, I'm gripped by this. I don't know what this means. And Christians sometimes who write me notes are like, well, what he just said about God, of course that's God. And if you deny God, and so right there, it's in the middle. And this is exactly why I think Jordan Peterson is like Jim and Pam. Now, let's go back to the PowerPoint. And so I want us to look a little bit at The Office. Now, The Office was this huge hit. And I think if you're listening to Peterson, you might have some indication that when something is a hit, especially something is an enduring hit like that, sure, it's smart writing and it's people, it's great acting, and you know, the Office was a well put together show, but it was a well put together show for its moment. It connected with something deep in the culture, and so there's a reason that, you know, I bet you I'd be very interested to know on Netflix just how much traction this show gets, because my assumption is that especially in the demographic that the advertisers want, which is teenagers through young adults, that show still on Netflix is just banging away, you know, hitting top numbers. People are watching it over and over and over and over and over again. And I've seen some episodes, I don't know how many times, because, and I watch my kids and I think there's something that's grabbing them in there. They're working stuff out, not unlike, again, Jordan Peterson's kid was working out and watching the whale in Pinocchio. So The Office, if you're not aware of the show, and you might be living under a rock if you've never watched The Office, Jim is the main character. Yes, he's a white male, he's a main character, and there are reasons for that in our culture. Psychological reasons, sociological reasons, economic reasons. You know, white males, I'm not going to go there with that whole conversation. But Jim is really the main character, and Pam is right there with him. The two central characters, and really when the show began, the main focus of the show was the romantic tension between them. So for the first few seasons, everything was that romantic tension. And that is such a common Hollywood tactic. I remember years before with Cheers, it was Sam and Diane. And even before that, General Hospital, it's Luke and Laura. I mean, how many movies, if you you want to start talking about archetypes, how many movies, how many TV shows, it's the romantic tension. Will these two get together? And what's keeping them from get together? And so that energizes the show. Now you might say, well, what does that have to do with Jordan Peterson? Well, hang on, we'll get there. But if, as we go down the characters of the show, you're going to see that this show hits on all the major issues that our culture is dealing with. You have Michael Scott, who's a clown, who is so politically incorrect. And really, you know, Jim and Pam are kind of the center of the show. Right there is Michael Scott in this office. And he's the boss, and he's politically incorrect. He says everything wrong. He says racist things. He says homophobic things. He says offensive things. He's always doing the wrong thing. And so this is some kind of implicit grooming and training of people. This is what's politically incorrect. This is what isn't. And Michael Scott, in a sense, in this show, is running his own morality play that works on all of the identity politics of what I call the ascendant morality. Dwight is the authoritarian. And you know, again, you try and figure out who is Dwight. And so the relationship between Jim and Dwight is very much a relationship between the cool everyman in American culture and the authoritarian. And so Dwight is the authoritarian. And of course, Dwight's love interest, Angela, is the propagator of conservative folk religion. She's Christian-y, she's Christian-ish, she loves cats, she loves kitschy things, she's judgmental, nobody likes her, and the whole office is in some ways just trying to tolerate her and trying to not violate the central tenet of our culture, which is be nice. So they have to be nice to Dwight and Angela, but doggone it, it's really hard, and so they're trying to be nice to them. Then you've got some of these other characters. Creed is the creeper. He's using the women's bathroom and paying the women. I mean, Creed is such a hilarious character in this story, but he's creeper, he's a thief, he's always shadowy, in trouble with the law. Daryl and Stanley, the two African-American characters, they obviously facilitate conversations about race. Oscar, the gay character, obviously facilitates conversations about LGBT issues. Phyllis brings in the body size issues. Toby is HR, and so Michael Scott and Toby. So you've got Jim and Pam and what's going on with them. You've got Michael Scott and Toby. So you've got the politically incorrect guy with the, in a sense, the priest and the gatekeeper of political correctness in the modern office. And then Kevin, you know, lots of insinuations about ableism and disabilities. Kelly and Ryan are kind of the negative foil for the romance against Jim and Pam. Kelly and Ryan always have a very dysfunctional relationship going on. And so we're watching them as we're watching Jim and Pam. And again, I think about what Peterson says about Jung, that all of these, all of our sub-personalities, all of these people that inhabit us are just watching all of this. And so I think for, you know, especially that age group, you know, that whole age group is just absorbing The Office and just absorbing all of the patterns of this is how relationships are supposed to play out. And then, of course, Roy, who works down in the warehouse, you know, the strong men, the people, the blue-collar workers work downstairs, and that's kind of a mysterious blue-collar world, but in that way, in a sense, the locate The office locates itself in the upper story where all the real things go on. This is where the elites manage the world. And down there in the office with Daryl and Roy and a bunch of other nameless people, that's kind of the blue-collar world. And Roy comes up from the blue-collar world, and he and Pam are engaged. And so if you look at, say, Pam's narrative arc, she goes from being kind of this blue-collar girl. And the question is, will she marry the white-collar guy? Will she go from being a humble receptionist to an artist? But then she's going to become a wife, and she's going to become a mom. And so this show is simply packed with all of these issues that young white and non-white Americans between, 13 and 25 are going to be dealing with in their life. And so this is the makings of a hit show. Now, I don't know necessarily that the creators of the show sat down and dialed this all in. They're very smart people, obviously. Maybe they did. But when you look at this show and you look at the culture, you begin to realize this is addressing exactly the issues that our culture is trying to sort out. How can we stay on the same page? How can the office be productive? How can we not have open warfare happen when we've got, the cool couple, Jim and Pam, are the couple that everyone's supposed to relate to, everyone's supposed to live vicarious through, everyone's supposed to identify with. That's how fiction works. You've got Michael, the politically incorrect guy. You've got Dwight, the authoritarian. You've got Angela, kind of the folk religionist. You've got the gay guy. You've got the black folks. You got the fat folks. You got the people who have low IQ like Kevin. You've got all of this. And so in the world of The Office, they're trying to have a functional, productive world. Okay. Now you might say, well, what does this have to do with Jordan Peterson? Well, let's get back to the thesis I presented in some of my earlier videos, where I very much believe that our current culture war in the West, especially in the United States where I live, also in Canada and some of the other countries, Britain, the current culture war is really a Christendom civil war. Now by Christendom, I mean, this is the West that grew out of Roman Catholicism, Latin Christianity. And I mean, the story in the East with the Orthodox is a little bit different, but in the past videos, I kind of walked through, you've got medieval Christianity into the Protestant Reformation, and then the crisis in the Protestant Reformation was very much a crisis of authority. What is the foundation of authority? Is it from Scripture alone, or is it the church authority through tradition? And also deeply within the Protestant Reformation, you've got a lot of church and state things. Of course, out of this, the United States is this technically secular federal government. The states kind of had religions, but technically secular federal government. And then that leads into, again, I treated this in past videos, that leads into this conflict between looking for all of the European wars of religion, and we've got to stop killing ourselves. And so this split between rationalism and empiricism, which leads all the way to Nietzsche. And of course, that's where we pick up Peterson. We have Nietzsche and Jung and Dostoevsky and on from there. But again, the main thesis here is that this culture war is a Christendom civil war. And I know many who are Christian on the right say, no, those on the left are leaving Christianity and anti-Christian, and certainly many on the left would agree with them. But my thesis is they're all working from this platform, that this very large, long-standing platform that Western civilization bequeathed to them. And it's exactly at that moment that Jordan Peterson comes and says, we better not throw out this platform, because if we lose this platform, we're going to lose a heck of a lot more. Now, another thesis that I presented in some of my past videos is that consciousness prioritizes dualism. We are simple creatures, and in some way we're very complex, but consciousness, I think, really focuses us to really only look at a few things. So one of the dualisms that we often kind of work with is kind of the dualism that one of the lines in the culture wars is between the supernaturalists and the naturalists. Question, is there life after death? Supernaturalists say, yeah, we go to a better place, or we go to heaven, or we're reincarnated, or supernaturalists say there's that life is not all, there's more to life than what is in the iron box of empiricism. So, is there life after death? Supernaturalists say yes. Supernaturalists pray. Supernaturalists say things like everything happens for a reason. Or if they're religious supernaturalists, they say, you know, God's will. God has providence. God works in mysterious ways. Supernaturalists say your life has a mission. God has a special plan for your life. That there's meaning and mission in life, and this is what you are meant to be. Supernaturalists say God or the universe, you know, that there's a plan going on. Naturalists contrast that. A thoroughgoing naturalist, unless they're at a funeral, says, you know, when you die, the only thing that lives on is your memory. And you can find kind of a romantic thing to say, well, they live on inside your heart. Yeah, but what happens when my mind goes? Then they're gone. So naturalists, you know, they're in a sense saying, okay, all there is in the box here of empiricism. And so when you die, you're done. And so we don't say you're in my prayers. We say you're in my thoughts. It's like, oh, at least they're thinking about me. That's in the box. We can live with that. We make our own reason or meaning. I don't need a God to validate me. I make my own meaning. And if I do something that I find meaningful, that's enough. That's within the empiricism box. Life is what you make of it. You can be anything you want to be. That's very much within the naturalist box. And now again, consciousness, we tend to look at this dualism, supernaturalist versus naturalist. And this is a very helpful distinction, but how it plays out in the culture is actually kind of different. Because what we actually have going is a triangle. And if you know anything about any kind of relational dynamics, triangles are full of energy. Now that sounds a little new agey, but it's triangles that keep binary conflicts from being boring. Because if it's binary conflicts, like in the United States, you have Democrats and Republicans and they just, you know, bang, 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 bang. Well, now you want to maybe put libertarians in the mix or independents. Well, now we've got something interesting because you can triangulate. You can get a wedge issue. And so what really gives the culture war energy in our culture is that the fact that we have religious supernaturalists who are people that go to church, or maybe they don't go to church, but if you ask them, they say, oh, I'm very much a Christian and I pray to God and I was raised this way. They are religious. They name their gods. They have loyalty to their gods. They identify with their gods. They identify with their tradition. They spend time learning about their tradition. They give money to their tradition. They are religious. Then you have the spiritual but not religious soft supernaturalists. They're often trying to play both sides because they get a little nervous about the authoritarian tendencies of religious communities and religious institutions, and they want to get along with everyone, so everything happens for a reason. Universe, manifest something for me now. But I'm not necessarily going to go to church every Sunday because I might go to this church and then maybe go and do some yoga and then maybe go look at these New Age videos and maybe I'll go to a spiritual place. And when I die, well, maybe it's reincarnation or maybe I go to heaven or I don't know. I'm not going to make a stand, but that's kind of where I'm at. Now, these two groups, the religious supernaturalists and the spiritual but not religious supernaturalists, they have their tangles. And now over here in the third leg of the triangle are the naturalists. And we kind of listed some of the things that they have that they're fighting for with each other. And so what you can see is that what happens is that these two groups, sometimes the spiritual but not religious people start annoying the religious supernaturalists, and they say, well, at least the naturalists are honest about what they believe. And then the naturalists look at these two groups and they look at the spiritual but not religious and they say, well, at least the church or the Bible isn't going to be controlling everything. These people are at least flexible and willing to listen, and we're not going to have creationism in public schools in Kansas or Nebraska. And then the spiritual but not religious people are looking at the religious people and say, oh, well, they're I don't like how they treat women, or I don't like how they treat gays. I'm closer there to the naturalist. So they go around and around and around and around the triangle. And again, you see this in The Office, Jim, Pam, and Roy, around and around the triangle. And all the tension comes from the fact that Jim and Pam sure like each other, but she's engaged to Roy. And Roy comes from the underworld, where he's blue collar and he's physical and he moves boxes. Jim just sits at a computer and types. And so everybody knows Roy's going to clean Jim's clock. And so every now and then in an episode, you know, dull Roy, who's not that sharp, and he's certainly not into Pam's feelings, and he's certainly not an adequate boyfriend for Pam, and we want to see Pam and Jim together, but Pam is engaged to Roy. So of course, as the show goes, when Pam breaks up with Roy, but just at the same time, Jim is off to the office in Stanford, and then Jim has met Karen, and so no, Karen is the obstacle, and round and round and round the triangle we go, and kind of like how you generate electricity, round and round and round and round and round produces those electrons, and that gives the show its force, and that gives the show its interest, and all of those creatures behind us are watching and thinking, how will this turn out? And all of the nuances of the relationships come out. This is exactly what's happening with Jordan Peterson, and the clip I just showed you shows that. With the naturalists, he's a scientist, and he believes in Darwin, and he's into the data. But with the supernaturalists, he's giving these lectures about the Bible, and people who are atheists are watching this and they're saying, wow, the Bible. This is amazing. He's blowing my mind about the Bible. Who likes the Bible? Well, spiritual, but not religious, but they might read the Bible, or they might read, you know, some kind of new spiritual guru that they found at Costco. And so a lot of people who are over there with naturalists, who got very disciplined about naturalism, because if you want to be a naturalist, you're going to have to be pretty disciplined, because you don't, You have to really rein in your heart. And when you go to a funeral and you look in that grave, you have to say, yep, they're gone. And so, you know, there's a certain way that religious people and naturalists kind of respect each other, because there's a bit of discipline in those ranks. And they look at the spiritual but not religious and they say, well, they're lightweights. You can't take them seriously. They're namby-pamby. They're wishy-washy. Whatever new wind blows, they're going to follow. So Peterson at the same time, he's reading Jung. He's not saying Jesus Christ is the only way to the Father. He's not saying that. That would tick off the naturalist and the spiritual but not religionist. And some of the religious supernaturalists would say, yes, finally. And so in many ways, what's happening in this tension is we're imagining that Jordan Peterson is on a mission. And all of the sides have their dog in this fight. And will Jordan Peterson come down and be a spiritual but not religious? Boy, he said some things about New Agers, which that doesn't look like it. Will he be a naturalist? Will he give up on all this Bible stuff? Will he listen to Sam Harris and Brett Weinstein? My take is no. Jordan Peterson is not a 20-year-old. Jordan Peterson is a 50-year-old who has thought these things through. And when Jordan Peterson answers questions like he has on, you know, is, are you a Christian? Which is, again, the question that everyone wants to ask. Well, he has his answer. And his answer puts him right back in the triangle, and round we go. Now, at some point, some people will get sick of him and move on to something else. And that's kind of where we get into the Truman Show, because everyone kind of wants to kind of know, how will it end? I don't think it's going to end someplace. I think what Peterson is doing is more, it's more like The Office, that we are basically watching him work his stuff out like a teenager or a young adult watches Jim and Pam and Roy and Kevin and all the office dynamics. And this is why we watch Jordan Peterson. This is why, because we are trying to sort ourselves out. And he's obviously an intelligent person, and he's not doing some of the quick dismissive things like hardcore people in all of the other quadrants do. And so anyone else who's in the middle is watching him. And well, why am I watching him? Well, you're watching him because you're working out your stuff. And even, you know, even someone like myself, I've got solid religious credentials. I've been a Christian Reformed minister for 27 years. I was raised in the Christian Reformed Church. The Christian Reformed Church is a conservative Christian denomination, not as conservative as some would like, way more conservative than others would like, but I've got solid religious supernaturalist credentials, but all of the cross pressures in here are at work. And so, you know, I read BioLogos and I'm thinking about these kinds of issues. And so then listening to Jordan Peterson helps me think about things, adds new information, works out some new things. And so, yeah, quite honestly, I'm watching Jordan Peterson for the same reason as some of my kids are watching The Office. We're figuring stuff out. We're watching him. We're kind of living vicariously through him, or we're rooting for him. But you know, there's tension in this triangle, and that's where all the power comes from. So I tried to make a little shorter video. Looks like I succeeded because some of my other videos are pretty long. Again, if you enjoyed this video, please, you know, leave a comment. I'll try to look at the comments. If you want to get in touch with me, hunt down my email address. I'm around. And if you can't, please, if you do leave a comment and I can't get to it, please be patient, because again, I'm a pastor of a small church. I'm not used to the kind of numbers I'm seeing on these videos. I'm not used to, I was not prepared for this. I just started doing this stuff for fun. And again, I'm quite moved and humbled by the response, and I don't quite know what to do with it. So if you'd like to ask me a question, a number of you have brought questions to me about Christianity. I love talking about Christianity. It's my job. I'm a believer. Some of you have said a pastor shouldn't be dabbling in this. Okay. You know, we're all entitled to our own opinions. But again, thanks for watching, and thanks for subscribing. I don't know what I'll do with all of this. Like I said, this isn't my day job, but I'll take it as it comes. And if I use my Christian language, I'll say, we'll see where the Lord leads. If I use my secular language, I speak both languages, I'll say, well, I'm going to just see where it goes. And I'm going to keep doing this for as long as it's fun, as long as it seems helpful to anybody. So, yeah, thanks for watching. Send me a note, leave a comment, like, subscribe, whatever. Whatever. Thanks for watching.